Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show for you this week. Ken and I look at the semi-finals of the World Snooker Championships, and Ken gives us his prediction on who he thinks will win it. Will Slattery joins me from the Irish Independent newspaper to talk about the TikTok Women's Six Nations Championship and a bit of the URC coverage as well. Declan Drake has all of your GAA coverage with Sean Lane live in studio. And we also have football, as always, with Alan Cawley looking back at the League of Ireland this week. So download the show now wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, football time now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you? Are you okay?
Yeah, all good indeed. There was plenty going on. There's no doubt about it last night. We saw some interesting results. St. Pat's going down 4-0 to Derry City. Actually, we have a clip here from last night. Declan Drake caught up with Rory Higgins. Just have a quick listen to that before I get into it with you.
Yeah, really, really good performance. A large part of the work was done in the first half. I thought our first half performance was absolutely brilliant, of the highest level. We were really good in the first half last week as well, and we've continued it on here tonight. And I thought our attack and play was really good. But as Alan Reynolds mentioned in the change room after the players, that there was some really, really good play, but our intensity out of possession was outstanding. And
yeah, Rory Higgins there. Derry manager with a convincing win last night, 4-0, it has to be said. But Pat certainly won't be happy about that result.
No, a massive win, Reggie, and almost a statement of intent, really, with Derry when you go to Inchicore and win 4-0, and it's an unbelievable result, really. And obviously this weekend we had first playing third and second playing fourth, and people were like looking at that thinking, you know, how the games are going to go and how the league table will look this morning. But I don't think anyone envisaged that Derry would win 4-0. They might have fancied Derry to win in Inchicore, but certainly wouldn't have expected them to win 4-0, and that's a hell of a result. I think that's 11 goals they've scored now in the last couple of games as well. So certainly they're keeping up their part of the bargain in terms of trying to give us some sort of title race. And obviously Shamrock Rovers, which we'll discuss as well, slipping up puts them 3 points clear at the top again. So we're just hoping they can maintain it, and I think with results like that, if they can carry on getting those type of results, they'll be over the moon, Rory Higgins, and I definitely think they will maintain it. Pats, on the other hand, will be very disappointed, and they've been very hit and miss and inconsistent this year. Reggie, I know there was the turnover with the manager and there was a lot of players as well. So it's going to take Tim Clancy maybe a bit of time, get his feet under the table and see exactly in terms of where they're going and what his best team is. But that's a very, very poor result at home to Derry.
Let's have a listen to Tim Clancy's thoughts on that. Declan caught up with him as well.
Yeah, that's it. We're giving the ball away in areas, trying to pass in areas where you're putting your teammate under pressure. Defensively, we have been quite good, but it's one of them nights tonight that we're making silly, silly errors. We got punished by a good team, but it's still not acceptable. It's very, very frustrating, but sure, we're not going to have time to dwell on it. We have to fix it.
Yes, Declan, Tim Clancy there. They have to move on. They have to try and fix it.
They certainly do, Reg, no doubt about it. But I have to give absolute full credit to Derry City. I've watched a lot of football this season in the league, and the first half display, particularly last night by Rory Higgins' team, I have to say was the best I've seen all season. They were outstanding, high tempo, quality, got the early goal, which helped them. And as Alan said, and I would fully agree, hopefully they can sustain that. They have to play Pats again in 10 days' time, then they come down to Tallaght Stadium to play Shamrock Rovers as well. But I do think we have a genuine title race this season.
Yes, Alan. Rovers, we mentioned them there as well in the intro. They got a 1-1 draw with Sligo Rovers away from home, but they'll be disappointed, I'd say, probably dropping a point on that one.
Yeah, I'm down home here. We were covering the game last night, Reggie, and I'm still not sure how it ended up 1-1, to be honest. It was something similar. I'm not sure if Declan was at the game. He might have been for Shamrock Rovers Shelburne there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was literally a carbon copy of that match. Shamrock Rovers were in total control, totally dominant for the guts of 55 minutes, an hour, and then a sloppy bit of play gave Sligo Rovers a little bit of impetus in an attack, and then Sligo Rovers got a little bit of belief in themselves and decided to have a go, and a goal came out of absolutely nothing. And Shamrock Rovers threw it away, to be honest, because they actually, after that, Sligo Rovers gained in confidence, and if anything, they look like they might have went on to get the 3 points, Reggie. So I'm sure Stephen Bradley is absolutely furious. He mentioned in his after-match interview that he was very disappointed with how they managed the game, and I would agree with that. For 20 minutes of the second half, nothing really was happening, and then a couple of substitutions. Sligo Rovers brought on a young lad, young Heaney, added a bit of life and energy to it, and it was almost as if the crowd decided we'll have a go with the team as well and got involved in the game. And as I say, the goal came out of absolutely nothing, but Shamrock Rovers to be in so much control of the match. The only criticism I would have of them at the moment, and it's something similar now, they got away with it in Talca Park because they got the late goal and got the win, but they're not killing teams off. Like, there's Declan speaking about, obviously, Derry City, a really good, convincing first half performance and getting their 2 or 3 goal lead. Shamrock Rovers were in total control of the match last night, but they're not putting teams to bed. And while it's 1-0, you always have a chance, Reggie. And despite Sligo Rovers being outplayed, as I say, for a good 60 minutes, whilst it was 1-0, they were always probably just in the game, maybe getting a set piece, of whatever opportunity might come from that. And I suppose that's exactly what happened. But they'll be bitterly disappointed, Stephen Bradley.
Yeah, it's been a real yo-yo race, hasn't it, over the last couple of weeks? You know, Rovers were 6 points behind at one stage, and then they were just, was it 3 points or a point behind, and now it's back to 3 again. So it's setting it up nicely for a couple of weeks' time in Tallaght when Derry City come to town. Now, I know, Alan, of course, there's a couple of games to go before that.
It'll be an absolute cracker, Declan. Yeah, I'll be looking forward to that game, but that's the only thing with Shamrock. Now, look, We're probably nitpicking in terms of, Declan, I suppose, the fact that they're unbeaten now in 9, and last night they were going into the game looking to win their 6th game on the trot. So they're obviously not in bad form at all. But just the fact that they were in so much control of the game last night. Now, the pitch wasn't great last night, I must say, down the Showgrounds, and they've had trouble with it since the start of the season, and it didn't lend itself to any kind of nice, attractive football. The players did the best what they could, and it didn't help Sligo Rovers either, who like to play football. But certainly the game that's coming up in a couple of weeks will be an absolute cracker. And I think you look at the day table at the moment this morning, and going off the back of the results as well, Declan, we're hoping Derry City can maintain that challenge, because there's nobody else going to put it up to Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, that's for sure. And things not getting any better for Damien Duff and Shelburne either, going down 1-0 to Finn Harps away from home. And that's another big disappointment for Duff.
Yeah, that was a dreadful result, Reggie. And it was a late goal, Barry McNamee, I think it was the 88th minute. And I'm sure even Damien Duff probably at that stage is thinking we'll take the point and go up the road with it. But the one thing I was kind of saying at the start with Shelburne was that they just have to establish themselves back in the Premier Division and finish maybe mid-table and build on that. But they're getting themselves dragged right into the mire in terms of what's down there at the bottom. And I watched Finn Harps a couple of weeks back and they're absolutely dreadful. Now, that was a great result for them at home. But Shelburne don't want to be getting themselves dragged into that mire down near the bottom. And that's exactly where they find themselves, because the results have been so poor in this first series of games.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, across the water then. Another interesting series of games. Just the 1 point separating the top two, Liverpool and City. Liverpool away to Newcastle at 12:30 today. That's going to be a tricky one. I don't think Newcastle have been beaten since before Christmas at home, have they?
Yeah, that will be tricky, Reggie, especially coming off the back. Now, I know it was a convincing win in Europe, but it was still a game they had to play, obviously, midweek as well. So he'll probably shuffle the pack a little bit. But it's a game that they have to win, because we all know City are relentless as well. And the margin is so small at the top that obviously not even a draw will do it for any of the teams. They have to win every match. So it's an important game for them. You're right about Newcastle. Since Eddie Howe has come in, I think they've been absolutely brilliant and got themselves into the top half of the table. So they're playing with a lot of confidence as well. But I do expect Liverpool to get the victory, but it certainly won't be easy by any means.
City as well, they're away to Leeds this evening at 5:30. I know it hasn't been all that great of late for Leeds, but they're a tough outfit at home. You'd expect City to get the job done, but any chance of an upset?
Yeah, that'll be tricky as well, Reggie. I'd still expect City to win, but it won't be easy. And as you say, that's a hostile atmosphere, Elland Road, especially when Man City come to town as well, or any of the Manchester clubs. But I definitely think that'll be a tricky game. And they've Calvin Phillips back, which is a huge plus for Leeds. He's a great player. And they've missed him for large parts of the season. He's back from injury as well. So last year they went there and I think it was a 1-1 draw. And they obviously held City to a point. So if they can pull that out, I think that'll be a great result. But you would fancy City. But coming off, it's just how to manage these games now, Reggie, coming off the back of big European nights as well, you know, and players injured. And they obviously have their return leg during the week as well, so they'll be shuffling the pack. Now, they do have the squads to cater for it. But because the title race is so tight, you just can't take any chances. So you nearly have to be playing your best players all the time just to get that victory, because you can't see Liverpool slipping up either. So I do expect them to win, but it'll be a tricky match.
We're very tight on time, but I have to talk to you about the game during the week, City-Real Madrid. What a game of football.
Unbelievable, Reggie. Absolutely incredible. The knockout stages of the Champions League over the last few years have just been absolutely unbelievable. And I'm not sure how Real Madrid are still in this tie, because PSG should have beat them in two rounds ago. Chelsea should have beat them. And now Man City should have hammered them out of sight the other night. So, but they're still hanging in. And I think it's largely down to Benzema. In the form of his life, he's just incredible.
And at home, in the return, you wouldn't write them off. And as you said, Benzema getting two, like, you just wouldn't write them off.
No, I'd fancy City to go through, but City should have killed the tie the other night, Reggie. Yeah. They have this unbelievable ability, Real Madrid, to just hang in the games. I'm not sure how it is, or it's certainly not by design. But in all the games so far, the knockout games, PSG, Chelsea, and obviously that one, Jordan, they're just managing to stay in the game and hang in the game. And when you have Benzema, you always have a chance. But I think this will just be a bridge too far. I fully expect City to get the job done in the away leg.
And a quick mention of Liverpool as well. A good 2-0 victory. It probably could have been more. It looked like it was going to be 4 or 5 at one stage, but job done.
Yeah, brilliant performance as well. And that's the thing, even though Newcastle, as I say, will be a tricky game, Liverpool are unbelievable. And the job that Klopp has done, and the big news during the week that he's obviously extended the contract as well, Reggie.
Yeah.
So they're full of confidence. Everything is going hunky-dory for them on and off the pitch at the moment. They're relentless to form. Obviously, the game during the week was so comfortable against Villarreal as well in the Champions League semi-final. It's unbelievable, really, how good they've been. Okay. But it was a great victory.
Absolutely. OK, who have you got in the podcast this week?
I think Keith Ward is coming on this week. So we had a good one with Jack Byrne during the week as well, Reggie. So people should check that out. Actually, really interesting. We had Jack and his mate on, and it was very good chat.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. I suppose we're going to start with Six Nations and Ireland taking on Scotland a little bit later on in the Women's Six Nations TikTok Championship. We spoke a bit about it, the English game and the fears and everything else that were going to go around that. And it came to pass. There was a lot of resilience for a while from the Irish team and they did their best. But in the end, they ran out 69 to zip losers to a very strong and undefeated English side. So it came to pass the way we sort of predicted, but it left a whole load more questions to be answered. And a lot of conversation in media all week around the women's game and how seriously it's been taken in this country. What are your own thoughts on it as it stands after that defeat?
Yeah, as you said, we kind of forecasted what might unfold. And I said that potentially that if it was a really heavy defeat, it could ultimately, in a weird way, work in the team's favour in the long run. I think a lot of people did. The issues we raised last week around the sevens players and availability, I think a lot of people were just really perplexed about why that was. You know, the tournament itself is only taking place this weekend, so it was even just a training camp. And it's not even like a massively important tournament. So I think a lot of people were scratching their head about it. And then I think generally, like, the tournament, it wasn't a good look for, like, a professional team to be absolutely rampant against an amateur side. Like, you saw the set piece and the scrummaging. You'll be able to tell that better than anyone. That's not safe, I wouldn't have thought, for the scrum to be complete, like, you know, as if you're driving a car almost with the speed it was going backwards. Like, those kind of things, I think, made everyone sit up and take pause. Like, what kind of future does this tournament have in the short to medium term if one team, and then France to a lesser extent, are so far ahead of the rest? Like, as you say, Ireland were very resilient in that first half, defended really well, but there's only so much you can defend, you know, until the cracks appear. And in the second half, I think England ran in 8 or 9 tries. Like, you know, that's what a professional side will do to an amateur side. As the game goes on, they're going to get stronger, the amateur side will flag. So yeah, I thought it was a very dispiriting outing. Like, to be fair, even if Ireland had everything right and got everything right, it was still going to be probably a pretty substantial defeat. But as I said, hopefully in the long run, some of the lessons of the last week can be learned and there can be more of a focus put on the 15 team so they don't lose half their team before such a big game in future.
I saw even some of the English players tweeting that this was unacceptable, that, you know, all week we were looking at pictures of the Irish players going back into work on Monday morning into their job, having suffered that defeat and getting on with life. And you know, that kind of pressure when the English players were going back into recovery camps and, you know, ice baths and physio and everything else. And as you said, safety wise, it just doesn't make any sense. But where does the book stop? I mean, we're good at kind of giving out about the IRFU and saying they're not putting enough effort into it. And that is now being reviewed and they're saying that that's happening. But our World Rugby very responsible for this as well. Should they be funding the women's game more? For, like, you know, we've got a TikTok Women's World or Six Nations Championship, so it's a well-sponsored event. It's getting lots of media coverage, so there is money involved in it. So maybe the powers that be outside of there, if you need to be putting more money into this to make sure that it's an even playing field as well.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting debate. Like, each country has slightly different circumstances. Like you mentioned there, the Irish players who have to go into work this week, I think they've been, you know, talking about a lot in the media. Some of them are teachers. Some of them, I think, are working, you know, in kind of the science fields and stuff like that. Like, that is, that's no way to prepare for a game. But then you consider it of the sense of, like, so a sevens contract is very low paid. I think it's around 20 grand a year for the sevens players. So, like, if that's, is that what you might be looking at for the women's contracts potentially? So is someone expected to, you know, give up a good job that they've worked, to, you know, over the last 7-8 years to develop in, to take a very low paid professional contract? So there's kind of considerations like that as well. I don't know the answer to the, you know, what's financially feasible or what contracts they could potentially offer, but it's a very interesting question. I know this week Greg McWilliams has said that some sort of kind of professional contracts for 15s players is on the card for potentially as soon as next season. But I'd be very interested to see, you know, how that's done and who gets contracts and are players willing to walk away from their career. And the World Rugby piece is interesting as well. Like, it's unsustainable for the sport to have one team fully professional and, like, running roughshod over everybody else. Like, at least when the All Blacks are doing it in the men's game, at least everyone's professional and they're just, you know, a lot better than everyone else. It doesn't feel like the deck is stacked in their favour. So, yeah, it's at a real crossroads. And, you know, we even saw Wales going professional for, you know, some of their squad. That made a big impact already. They've already had some very good results in the Six Nations. So it can make a huge difference in a short space of time. It's just getting the finances right and whether or not a player would be willing to actually say, OK, I'll give up my career for a couple of years to go professional. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I also saw some other arguments during the week, which was an angle I hadn't thought about. There was people making the point that, look, what makes rugby so special? You know, across the board in all sports that women and men are competing in, both sexes are competing in, there are amateurs training, playing, trying to compete at the highest level, particularly for Irish sports people, and going into work on a Monday morning. And, you know, that's just life, unfortunately. It's a sideline to your career. And I suppose the point being that for professional men's rugby, it is a career, but it isn't going to be for a long, long time for women because there's never going to be that level of money in it to give them a decent wage.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate. Like, yeah, will it ever get to the stage where female players are earning, you know, salaries comparative to the men's one? Oh, I don't think so, personally. I agree. I think that maybe, I don't know if the interest level is there to sustain that sort of kind of financial model. But then it begs the question of what would be sustainable, like, and what would players be willing to accept? Like, you know, you were around when rugby went professional on the men's side. I'm sure there was teammates you had who would have had very good jobs, having worked for a number of years, and they had to decide whether they wanted to maybe give professionalism a go for a couple of years. And a lot of good players opted against it. I know, especially in England, where a lot of kind of well-known guys at the time, or a couple of them, decided to just keep working in London City rather than, and keep kind of trying to play for Harlequins, what have you, rather than go professional. So even back then, it was a debate, you know, about what's acceptable to kind of pursue your sporting, you know, ambitions. You know, I take the point about amateurism, but you can't have a mix of both, I don't think. Like, yeah. England can't be professional with everyone else being amateur. If they were all amateur, that'd be one thing. But to have a Six Nations tournament with, like, one or two teams basically operating on a completely different plane to the rest in terms of professionalism, I just think it's a bit of a joke, to be honest. And, like, there was an unbelievable crowd at Welford Road. That was the disappointing thing. You know, it was a great, like, if that was a competitive game, you'd be saying, oh, God, the game's in real rude health. But they were just there to see a turkey shoot. And, like, that's not good for the game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, again, I come back to my point. That's where I would believe that World Rugby needs to take more responsibility as overseers of the game, to put it in that position, you know, and make sure that it's safe, because it's not safe having amateurs playing against professionals. I don't care what anybody says, that's not a safe environment, and you can go out there, but somebody's going to get hurt, and that's the reality of it. And I suppose, the you know, again, if you look at women's football, for example, in many parts of the world, world women's football is professional and at the highest level and equally as good a product to watch as any of the men's games, better arguably in some cases. But you don't have a situation here where you've got Piemont and places like that for women's teams that are getting paid at the highest level to be able to live off, you know. So that's the biggest game in the world is football, you know.
Yeah, just to come in on that as well, like, you know, Greg McWilliams has been really kind of pushing the AIL and saying he sees the pathway in the AIL. But I think similar to the point I made earlier about when you guys went professional and a lot of guys went to England at first because that was where there was a better, more structured league and maybe more opportunities financially. Similarly, like, even though Greg McWilliams is pushing the AIL, it's the English Premiership, the Women's Premiership, that is kind of the market leader there. And I know some of the Irish players are over there at the moment, but... like, you know, you'd have to think in the short term, potentially even like a year or two over there, you know, training with these English players even could bring a lot of the Ireland players on, you know, quite a deal. So that's another kind of interesting decision.
And some players on that, sorry for cutting across you, but wasn't the URC putting the idea out there during the week that there might be a women's URC? That's because I know it wouldn't have happened for professional. Wouldn't have happened if the Celtic League didn't come about.
Yeah, no, it was interesting to hear the CEO say it. Now, I think it was kind of some response to a question. I don't think he just brought up this grand plan. So I think, you know, I think I'll wait and see on that one. I think it's a little premature in terms of getting a professional league up and running, considering the landscape of the various countries at the moment. But it was interesting to hear it even being mooted. That's probably like a medium to long term, you know, ideal, because at the moment, you know, it's the AIL that is still only kind of struggling to kind of gain kind of parity across the board. So yeah, it's really in flux at the moment. And like the Scotland game, obviously this weekend will be great to finish with a win, but it will be interesting to see after the Scotland game, you know, how do things develop over the next couple of months, looking ahead to the next time they kind of regroup and they gather for a match. There'll be a lot of kind of off-field structural issues to deal with in the meantime.
We'll see if they happen. Okay, moving on to the men's game then. The URC, good win last night for Munster. Again, you know, a lot of the young guns standing up and sticking out is the only way to describe it. But it was a good win against Cardiff. Double scores, really. Again, you'd ask questions, a lot of questions about Welsh rugby and the state that it's in. But good performance for Munster.
Yeah, you could have a situation where not a single Welsh team finishes in the top eight of the league to get into the playoffs, which would be a damning indictment of where they're all at. Munster have kind of put together a good winning run here. You know, before the Exeter second leg, they were staring down the barrel of potential European elimination with a trip to Ulster to come that could have maybe sent them, you know, tumbling down the table. Now they're in a very strong position. They have a home quarter final. They have the inside track to getting a home quarter final in the URC as well as what they've already achieved in Europe. So yeah, there's lots of reasons to be positive, and I agree. There's been a good mix. The young players, you know, mixing well with the old guys. Like Peter Manny obviously looked unbelievable against Exeter. But then last night, I thought Ben Healy was really good. Craig Casey, I thought, had a really good game. Someone who, you know, after making the initial breakthrough, probably, I thought anyway, maybe didn't kick on quite as well as I'd hoped this season in his appearances. But I thought he was really sharp last night. He'll be a key guy off the bench for them against Toulouse and then some of these other knockout games to come. So I think Munster can be very happy with where they are. Again, you know, in some of these games, they can play some really good rugby and you're like, oh, they actually do look, you know, quite good with ball in hand. The big test is when they play Toulouse now, you know, how do they play? Will they be able to kind of tap into some of that style? Because we have seen them maybe tighten up a bit of knockout games over the last couple of years, which has been their undoing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mentioned it earlier, the AAL closer to home here has really gotten to the final weekend. So we're looking at a huge one, Clontarf and Terenure in the big decider. Clontarf probably slight favourites for that one, I'd say.
Yeah, they beat Terenure in both games, home and away, during the season. But, you know, the second one was very close. And even though Clontarf are the favourites, they've been in a lot of kind of finals and been knocking around, and they have won a couple of titles, but they probably haven't won as much as they should. So they will feel a certain level of pressure. And for Terenure, there's just been a real good groundswell around the area. I'm living not too far from there, and there's been a massive support, you know, in the community for them. They just seem to be building a little bit of momentum. And, you know, even the scenes at the semi-final, like, there was so much support there. They always put on a great show in Lakelands. They have a huge marquee and they get in a lot of fans and supporters there. So I think they'll have a good crowd there in the Aviva on Sunday. And I actually give them a chance. I think things are kind of coming right for them at the right time. They've never won the AIL. Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion that they might get over the line. I think, you know, Clontarf may be missing one or two guys who were involved with Leinster down in South Africa. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of an upset in the final.
Yeah, okay. Well, that'll be definitely one to watch. And just to finish with you then, I was devastated by this news because I have a lot of friends in Alcalá Rugby Club in Madrid. I've done some coaching over there, helping out. One of my best friends is a coach over there. And, you know, I have a real affinity to Spanish rugby as a result of that. And they're after getting turfed out of the World Cup after all the excitement there was. They were going to be playing Ireland. It was absolutely perfect. And they're gone for forgery and a prop. Gavin Vandenberg, who, of course, South African, but his passport was forged or something, and now it's got the whole country kicked out of the 2023 World Cup. Disaster for Spain.
And what's even more disastrous is this is the second tournament in a row where this issue has occurred. The same thing happened to them, albeit it was slightly different circumstances, but it was an ineligible player in 2019 as well. So for two tournaments in a row, they've been good enough on the field of play to qualify, and twice administrative cock-ups has cost them. And as you said, it was going to be Ireland's first game in the World Cup, I think in Nantes or Bordeaux, I can't remember which one. And, you know, Romania will take their place instead. But gutting news. And from what I understand, you know, the Spanish Federation are kind of pointing fingers at the club in this occasion about maybe it was their error. Gutting for Spain. I think 1999 was the last World Cup they competed in. And, you know, talk about, you know, growing the game and bringing in new countries. They would have had a great colour to the tournament. Certainly since it was in France, you would have expected a lot of Spanish fans to travel over to it. So, yeah, very disappointed for them. I feel for the other players in the squad who have qualified twice now, and then because of reasons outside of their hands, they don't get to compete. It must be absolutely devastating for them.
Golf time now that I'm joined on the line by Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. All good, yeah? And you?
Oh, very good indeed. Looking forward to a good weekend of sport. I suppose we were looking at the LPGA and Palos Verdes, but it didn't kind of go great for Leona and Stephanie Meadow on day one. How's it all faring out?
Oh, yeah, and it didn't go well on day two for Leona. So that's her first missed cut this year. She shot 274s, six overs, par 71. So, you know, I'd say she was kind of excited going back to the Palos Verdes Championship in California because she won a regional challenge tournament with her college back there when she was in college. So I'd say she probably was kind of excited. It's always nice to go back to a course where you've done well on. So I'm sure she's a bit disappointed, but, you know, no doubt she'll regroup. Stephanie had a great bounce back. She'd say 68 yesterday.
Yeah.
So she's made the cut at one under. And she's continuing her really promising form this year. So Stephanie had a great week this week too. She qualified for the US Open. She got one of the three spots at regional qualifying in a 36-hole total. She shot 2 under and led the field of 78 players. So she's really had a great start. And she'll be looking forward to going back into North Carolina to play in the Women's Open, and in 2014 in the same state, North Carolina, she was third. So I'm sure she's really, really excited about her start to the year.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm sure she's eager to return. And there's 10 million in that tournament this year. So anything in that tournament would really bump her up the standings. So, it, you know, it's while Leona is struggling, it's great to see Stephanie have such a promising start this year. And no doubt Leona will come back. It's probably something she's working through. So It's not all bad.
Yeah, it's not all bad, is right. So that's on in June, of course, that US Open.
Yeah.
So she'll have plenty of time to prep for that, and the form could be even better by then. So I suppose if we move across to the men, then you mentioned that Padraig Harrington, he's on the PGA Tour of Champions.
Yes, not much happened on the PGA. McDowell is the only one on the PGA this week in Mexico, and he's had a good start to the year, but he didn't do well there. So Harrington, yeah, is on the Champions Tour, and they play three rounds. When they get over 50, they only play three rounds, not four. He's second favourite there, 10-1, but he was second in his last outing. He's had a 4-week stint now on stateside, starting with the Insperity tournament in Texas, and he shot level par in round one. Started great. He had a birdie on the first, but he had five straight pars and then a bogey, and it just kind of halted his momentum. So he's not far behind. He's only five behind. He's playing with Steve Stricker, who's one of the leaders at 5 under. So he'll be out with him again today. So hopefully he can hang on to his coattails there. So this is the first of four tournaments. He's away for the whole month, and he's hoping to play in the PGA. Well, he's not. He's playing in the PGA as well.
Yeah.
in Oklahoma. That's the regular tour event. So I suppose the biggest challenge for Harrington on the seniors tour is probably to manage expectations, you know, because he's had such a stellar career on the PGA level, and he just has to manage those expectations. And he probably, you know, sometimes probably when you come from the ordinary tour and you've done well and you're kind of competing with the younger guys, you kind of feel that you just sort of come out of the seniors tour and sweep the boards. But there's some cracking players on there who have major tournament credentials. So that's the thing with Harrington. It's funny, he did say in the first couple of tournaments he played that Bernard Langer from Germany made his own pitch and looked like he was a 36 handicapper or a scratch player. So yeah. I think if Harry Harrington puts his mind to it, he'll win over and over again, and he'll win some of the senior majors. But you know, he's only just cutting his teeth at the moment.
Yeah, he'll need to feel his way into it a little bit. There's no doubt about it. He will apply himself to it, because that's the nature of the beast. He'll definitely go after titles. He's not going to just show up and take part in these things and take a check and go home. He's all about winning things. So I'd say once he gets a feel for it, as you say, he'll probably start really going after titles. And
That's
when he'd be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Yeah, I was mighty impressed this morning with those snooker player handicaps.
My God, they're unbelievable. Yeah. They're bandits. I've played with them. They're all bandits. Every single one of them. They must be. No wonder they're all finished playing snooker. They're out on the golf course every day. There's no doubt about it. But they are. They're great golfers. Ken himself is a handy golfer too. He's well able to play. Yeah, they're good golfers.
I was impressed
with them too. Yeah, I can't compete with that. Mm-hmm. Rugby players are not quite as good. Although there are a few good ones. O'Driscoll's a good golfer. So is Paul O'Connell. They're well able to play, but the rest of us are kind of hacking around. But we're getting better.
Well, so long as you're enjoying it.
Yeah, that's it. We mentioned Brian McDowell there, the sole Irish interest in the PGA roundup. He's had a really quiet time of it, gone off the boil entirely, but he's still, you know, rated up there with the best golfers.
Sure, Brian McDowell is a major winner, you know. You can't deny that. You know, and anybody who's won a major championship has to, you know, rate as a top class player. You know, it's just, golf's a funny game. You know, your game goes off, you lose a little bit of confidence.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, sport is all about confidence, and golf is even more so. But he has had a good start to the year.
Yeah.
He had 270s. He's tied 58th there in the PGA. But he's you know, he's a long way off the leaders, Ram and a couple of, you know, lesser known Americans there, Alex Smalley and Cameron Champ.
Yeah.
Ram is 12 under, he's 10 behind him. But you know Graham really wants to get himself back into the major tournaments, and if he can do that,
he has every chance.
That's where he wants to be.
Exactly.
You know, but he's a long way off at the moment, and probably will have to play like regional qualifying or Monday, Tuesday qualifying to get into those events later in the year. But if he gets into a few of those, he's going in the right direction. But it's just quiet on the PGA from the Irish point of view this week.
Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. It's Declan Drake and Sean Lane in the GAA section for the next few minutes here, and a very busy section indeed it is this morning as well. So let us not waste one second more and get straight into it. We start at Portlaoise on Thursday night. Dublin's under-20 footballers took on Kildare in the Airgrid Leinster final. Unfortunately, they lost by 17 points to 15 on the night, and a disappointing night overall for the Young Blues, it must be said. Could have possibly forced extra time out of it, but I think overall you'd have to say that Kildare were the better team on the evening, and congratulations to them as well. Well, after the game on the O'Moore Park pitch in Portlaoise, I took the opportunity to speak to the Dublin under-20 manager, Jim Lahan. He began by offering his opinion on what he'd seen over the course of the previous hour.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good game of football, high quality from both squads. I think Kildare were just a little bit better on the evening in terms of their score taking. They had some savage scores, we had a few wides, and really that's the story of the game. I think they were very close, evenly matched, but I suppose we were always chasing it a little bit after the start, and they were, I think on the night they deserved a victory, and what can you say?
You might still have been out there in extra time had a couple of decisions not gone against us. Now, you had fairly good views of them yourself. What were your thoughts on them?
Well, in the heat of the game, you know, decisions are made, and to be fair to the linesmen and the referees, it's difficult in those situations. So, I presume the ball was wide. To be honest, he signalled it wide, and that's how we're dealing with it. There's no hard feelings. It's one of those things. If it was a mistake, it was a mistake. I'm not 100% sure of myself. It looked like a score to me, but you know, I wouldn't criticise the officials in any way.
Well, unfortunately, the end of the championship run, but you would hope to see some of your lads progress now in the next couple of years to join the senior panel. There's certainly some fine talent in that squad that you've put together this year, Jim.
Absolutely, yeah. There's some fine talent in all of Dublin football, and certainly in that dressing room. There's a number of players who will play for Dublin at a senior level, without a doubt. They've got a good pathway to go now. They've come up through the years some of them since they were 13 or 14, but some of them have only come in this year, and they've added to the group as well. So I've no doubt that some of those guys will represent Dublin with pride over the next couple of years.
Jim, thanks for your time. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thanks there to Jim Lahan. Not easy to come out and speak to the media after a defeat like that, but fair play to the Oliver Plunkett's man there. And commiserations to the under-20 footballers. Won two games in Championship 2020, but unfortunately the game against Kildare proving just a bridge too far for them. And as you said, some fine talent in that team, so hopefully they can develop into senior players for whoever might be the Dublin manager in the coming years. Okay, we're going to turn to senior football now, and Championship 2022 starts for the Dublin senior footballers this evening as they make the trip to Chadwick's Wexford Park. The second consecutive week, of course, a Dublin team will have visited the sunny South East. They were there last year for the first round of the championship as well. Didn't have it all their own way, but they did emerge victorious eventually on their way to another Leinster title. Well, I spoke at around Christmas time to Coleman Goggins, the former Dublin captain, who in 2002 skippered Dublin to a fantastic Leinster final success. So quite a lot of water has gone under the proverbial bridge since, but I'm delighted to say that Coleman Goggins does join us once again on the programme this morning. A very good morning, Coleman. Thank you indeed for joining us.
Morning, Declan. How are you? I'm still waiting on that Christmas present from that meeting before Christmas, but we won't go there, I suppose. We'll leave that for the moment.
Well, we'll meet you in All-Ireland final day and we can sort it out then. Yeah. How did that sound?
Okay, we'll go with that. We'll go with that.
Coleman, since we spoke last, as I say, a lot of water has gone under the bridge since, not least relegation to Division 2 of the Allianz National Football League for next year. Overall, what was your assessment of that league campaign? Where does it leave us ahead of Championship 2022?
Yeah, I guess Desi went into the league and he kind of was quite clear at the outset that he was, you know, aware that there was going to be some, I won't call them problems, but there was going to be some teething issues in respect of identifying new talent, trying to knit the team together, some guys who were out injured, giving new players an opportunity, trying to maybe work on different setups and tactics that maybe he hadn't been run under the likes of Jim's tenure. So I guess there was always going to be some stuttering starts to the league campaign. Probably what was most surprising was maybe some of the goals that were given away. I think Dublin conceded 11 goals across the National Football League, which would be unlike them defensively. They've obviously built, you know, their reputation over the last number of years on been quite tight defensively, making teams work very hard for their goals, and the flip side of that then managing to nab a couple of goals themselves. So I guess the surprise was probably the amount of goals they conceded and then the amount of goals they scored. I think it was only 4 goals across the league. So you can see that there was, you know, Desi was working on some stuff, there was new players coming into it and there was issues in terms of getting scores, and you're always going to struggle, particularly in the early stages of the National League, if you're not managing to get goals, because there's such a big score. You know, when pitches are sticky, when there's, you know, big winds blown down the field, when conditions are against you, that the goal gives you that little bit of a cushion. You know, the goal that Kildare got in that particular league game down in Newbridge, you know, was ultimately the difference on the day. And if you look at Dublin's league results, there was some of those games that were tight where goals won them. So the league obviously didn't go the way Desi would have liked or Dublin supporters would have liked. You know, the last game against Monaghan after they had won 2 on the spin, you know, I kind of thought that they were on an upward trajectory, that they'd get the result up in Monaghan and managed to stay in the division, which would have been a great achievement given the you know, the poorer results at the start of the league. But Monaghan, you know, opened them up a few times in that league game, got 3 goals themselves, could have had a couple of more possibly. So there was areas there that would concern you, I suppose, at that point going into the championship. But there's been a shutdown since then. There hasn't been much noise out of the camp. They've probably worked on a lot of things that didn't go so well for them during the National Football League. So while relegation is a disappointment, I don't think you have to hang your hat on that and say, well, that's been a terrible year for Dublin. Certainly they'd love to stay in Division One. But really for Dublin, you know, Championship has always been where the marker starts, and they kick off this evening against Wexford, which is a challenging enough task, and hopefully we can see signs of progression from where they were maybe at the back end of the league.
Pluses and minuses, of course, in terms of the squad. Shane Carty stepped away recently, and we know that we've now Paul Mannion, now Jack McCaffrey, and one or two other players have moved on, like Kevin McMenamin, amongst others as well. But on the plus side, we still have a good core of experience there, the likes of Michael Fitzsimons, Johnny Cooper and James McCarthy, who I understand is captain for 2022. Very important to have that core of players together to guide through this young crop for the next couple of years, Colman.
Oh, most certainly. And, you know, there's serious talent still within the group. I mean, you line out your first 15, it's as strong a team as has been there, you know, give or take. Maybe they're lacking just that bit of firepower that the likes of Paul Mannion would give to you if he was still around the place. But, you know, you can't look back. You have to continue to look forward, particularly when you're dealing with football and how you're trying to win championships and progress. So there's still sufficient firepower to win games. There's, you know, still a lot of talent across the team. You know, if there was an area that it was probably a challenge for some of those senior guys who've collected the All-Ireland medals and have had Dublin at the top of the tree for so long, is building that trust and understanding with new guys as they come into the team. So they worked under Jim for such a long period of time. They had a real clear understanding of the ownership and the ask of them within the team and the roles. You know, Desi is coming in and has probably a different philosophy or a different way of trying to play that he'd like to impart and change things up a little bit. And then you have new players coming into the mix as well. So maybe there's that fraction of a second where, and it's not that you doubt the capabilities of the guys around you, but the system maybe hasn't catered for the new guys coming in. So you delay a second on the ball, or you don't give the pass when you should have, and that then narrows the space and narrows the options. So there's hopefully time has passed to allow that bit of trust develop to the system of play that Desi wants to introduce, that the senior players get around those new players coming into the system and talk to them around what it is exactly that we're trying to achieve when we're on the ball, when we're off the ball, so that it's a collective rather than us banking on individuals to try and win games, that there's a collective understanding of the need to everyone come together to win the game. So there's huge talent in the group, there's huge experience in the group, and if you can marry that with the right new talent coming through, well, then there's still potential power and presence in that Dublin team to have a good run through Leinster and on into the All-Ireland series, hopefully.
This time last year, of course, the league hadn't even started. Then, as I say, we went down and played Wexford in the first round. Now, after that game, all the talk was about Stephen Cluxton. Would he or wouldn't he come back to the Dublin panel? Desi telling us that day he'd stepped away. He hasn't come back. Con O'Callaghan this year hasn't played in the league at all due to injury. A lot of speculation floating around the city and county over the last number of months that he might make a switch to hurling, but we understand he's back in the Dublin football fold for 2022, and that's a huge, huge boost to Desi planning for this evening's game and beyond, Colman.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Declan, if you think of the commentary that existed around Stephen Cluxton for 20 years, well, maybe 15, because it took him a couple of years to maybe establish himself, although he wouldn't tell you that. He came into the dressing room all guns blazing when he first walked through the door. When you look at the commentary that surrounded him, like how he changed the game, how his kickouts were so influential, how he was the difference for Dublin in so many games, and then you take him out of the equation, that has a huge impact on the team. So his loss was certainly severely felt and continues, I suppose, to be felt, given that the goalkeepers, and Evan is an exceptional talent himself, are trying to get to the level and the bar that he set, which was a phenomenal level. So, you know, losing Stephen had a huge impact. And then the flip side of that is when you're missing someone of Con's power and ability in your full forward line or in your forward line altogether, that has a massive impact as well. And the one area maybe that Dublin were a little bit light this year was that inside line in terms of the power of winning balls. So certainly Kieran Kilkenny is able to go in there and do a job, but he can also come out, gets on the ball, he likes to try and set up play. So when you're missing that ferocious ball winner that Con O'Callaghan is, and the power that he possesses and his eye for goal, you know, if there's a three-quarter chance of goal, he's going to take it on and go for it. So it's a massive for Dublin that he'd be fit and hopefully able to take the field over the next couple of weeks, you know, hopefully good enough to be around today. I'm not sure where his injury is at, or as you've said, back into the Dublin squad where we see him in the game this evening. But even to have him back in the fold, you know, his experience, what he brings to it, his work ethic, his work rate, his mindset, all that stuff feeds into the new guys as well. So massive to have him back. But absolutely, the Stephen Cluxton piece. Very hard to replace what Stephen was and what he did for the team, but certainly they've made steps in moving forward, and with Conn and others around him, you know, playing to their abilities, they're well able to head to Wexford Park today, confident that they can put a performance together that should be good enough to win the game, albeit there'll be a challenge against Wexford because it's a huge opportunity for them too.
Absolutely, indeed. It can't be Championship 2022, even though I'm looking out our studio window here in the Dublin Docklands this morning, and it's far from summer weather, I can tell you. It's probably the same where you are as well this morning. Common soft day, as they say, down the country.
Yeah, we're due to hit the training field at 10 o'clock here. I can hear the rain hopping off the window, so that's not good.
It's great to see you still involved anyway in the game. You gave us a fantastic day in 2002, never to be forgotten, in Croke Park that particular afternoon. Coleman, pleasure as always again. Thank you very much indeed for taking our call this morning, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
No problem, Declan. Thanks, Emil. Take care.
Going to be in a while. Good there, Coleman Goggins, formerly of Ballinteer St John's, Dublin captain in 2000. Keep saying 2022, 2002. It's 20 years ago, man. Where do the years go? Anyway, we can tell you where time goes. It goes back to, before we actually switch to hurling, we must mention the ladies footballers. TG Carr Leinster Senior Football Championship this afternoon. First round against Westmeath. It's at TEG Cusick Park in Mullingar. Throw-in is at 1:30. Carla Rowe of Clanwirra will captain the Dublin team this year alongside Niamh Collins of County Champions Foxrock Cabinteely, and we wish Mick Bowen and the girls every success in their championship campaign in 2022. Meath and Parnell Park next Saturday night at 7 o'clock. That's one not to be missed, I can tell you. Right, we're going to switch now to hurling on the programme, and last Saturday Dublin enjoyed a splendid, stirring indeed victory over Wexford at Wexford Park, 24 points to 23. 14-man Dublin surviving the sending off of Keane O'Callaghan to record their second consecutive victory in this year's championship. Well, I was in Wexford Park last Saturday, and after the game in the tunnel, I caught up with the Dublin boss, Matty Kenny, who offered me this reaction to a fantastic victory.
Yeah, look, it was hard fought, and coming down here this evening, we knew it was going to be very, very difficult. Like, number one, Wexford is a fine hurling team, and this is always a difficult place to come down and get anything out of it. Like, so, you know, during the week when we were prepared, we said we want to come down here and get something out of tonight's game, and we're just delighted that we're coming away with the full 2 points.
To play the last, 15 minutes with 14 men when Keane O'Callaghan got his second yellow card, that showed the character as well in Buckloads.
Yeah, they showed massive character tonight, and the huge pride, and I'm so proud of the lads' their performance tonight. I thought we started the game really well. In fairness, and we had the wind with us, but it was a swirling wind, you know. So the guys had to really be, you know, really concentrate on their execution and keep that scoreboard ticking. So I thought we started really well in the first quarter, built up a 4 or 5 point lead. But Wexford came into it in that second quarter, mostly maybe through freeze, like, you know, and. Yeah, but we got a couple of pints in just before half time, which gave us that 4 or 5 pint cushion going in at half time, and which I thought was a good enough lead. But look, we had a good chat about it in the dressing room, and we said it was important. We didn't sit back, you know, and we didn't want to go to a sweep or anything like that. We wanted to keep pushing on and keep the scoreboard ticking at the other end. Yeah. And I think ultimately it was the scores we got in the second half into that breeze, and yeah, we got some really good scores. I think that's ultimately that got us across the line tonight.
And a man I know well, of course, Sean Brennan, the goalkeeper, that penalty save, absolutely key as well.
Yeah, we're 6 points up at the time, and I thought we were in a good position, like, you know. And look at if they'd got the goal, how significant it'd be, like, you know, it'd have been a massive momentum boost for them, like, you know. So hats off to Sean and getting down. He got down low to save that, and like that was probably a big play in that second half. But look at, you know, as I said earlier, you know, coming down here tonight, it's not an easy place to come, and against a good Wexford team, and so we're delighted to come away with the 2 points.
And 4 points in the bag now before you go to Cusick Park and Mullingar to face Westmeath next weekend.
Yeah, and look at, we got to get home now. We're just going for a quick bite to eat now. We're going to head back to Dublin, and then, you know, get recovered for next week and start planning for going to Westmeath down to Mullingar next Sunday. And look, we've got to go down, take it one game at a time, and go down and try to give a good performance again there. Good Dublin support down here this evening. We heard them all through the game, and so we hope to travel and support us in Mullingar again next Sunday.
Finally, just on next week, you're battling against Joe Fortune, a man that I'm sure you know well over the years when you're from your involvement in Dublin club hurling as well.
Yeah. So yeah, Joe, like Joe's doing a good job down there. Like his first year in there, like, you know, but you know, they're moving really well in the league. Like, so we're under no illusion, like, you know, that going down there to Mullingar, you know, that, you know, we got to focus on that and we got to bring our A game, and we got to again go down there and try to get something out of that game.
Yeah, 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon is the throw-in time at TEG Cusick Park. Best of luck to Matty and the boys, looking to make it 3 from 3. Just finally, on this section of hurling, before we get thoughts of Sean Lane, the Friends of Dublin Hurling are holding their annual golf classic on May the 19th at Castle Warden Golf Club, and they're appealing for tee box sponsors. Cost, by the way, of that is €100, but well worth it to support the great work that's been done in the hurling fields of Dublin. Contact Humphrey Kelleher there, 086 25 443 28. Thanks indeed to Maura Scully of the committee. They're getting in touch about that. Now, joining us in studio is our good hurling friend and analyst, Sean Lane. Sean, good morning to you. Stirring victory for the Blues last week. Your assessment of it?
Yeah, absolutely a great result. It's a place, you know, I think Liam was on with us last week, said it very, very difficult to win down in Wexford Park. Matty said it there, swirling breeze, but Dublin coped with it very well, unlike Galway the previous week. Dublin got a lot of early scores, really, really good scores, and well deserving of their 1 point win.
One change to the team going down to Westmeath tomorrow. It's Shane Barrett in for James Madden.
Yeah, and like Shane has had a run of injuries and probably struggled even to get into the Navina team last year for the county final, but when Shane is flying, he's a big guy, played the minor All-Ireland final I think when he was under 16 at Roy Corner back against Tipperary, so he's around a long time, he's loads of experience, big guy, and you know, and James Madden is, you know, will be thereabouts. But it is great to see two good lads going for the one spot, Declan. That's what we want.
Wiley, what do you expect from the visit to Cusick Park tomorrow afternoon?
Well, I suppose Westmead, you'd have to say they've been beaten heavily twice, but equally the very first day out against Kilkenny, they were only a couple of points off at half time. Kilkenny did run up a big score. I'd expect that you know, Ronan Hayes and Donald Burke and Young Wheatley and Danny Sutcliffe will have too much for Westmead and we'll go to 6 points out of six. But, you know, we need to get our minds right. As Matty said, going down, we'll have to take every game as it comes. And I think if we get it right, it's a great opportunity then. If things do go right, and I'm not suggesting they will go right, but if they do, he can run the bench in and give guys experience, which is badly needed.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.